that down there. I'm having a crack at this preaching from an iPad thing, you know. I'm used to using paper. You realise you're getting old when you've got a way of doing things that you really don't want to let go of. But I'm thinking, I've got to figure out the iPad. Got to get onto that because it's going to save a lot of ink. I've actually listened to some of the previous sermons just to see how you guys were going. And I believe Peter got the gold part of 2 Kings, the story about Elijah and the bears. If you haven't read that one, just Google it. Elijah and the Bears, greatest story in 2 Kings. I listened to Peter Elliott say it should be made into a Netflix series. And, you know, I think he's probably right. You know, people say if you shouldn't watch violence on TV. And if that's the case, well, you shouldn't read the Bible. Because this book's pretty full on. It's pretty. It's a bit like Vikings in real life. So we're in a historical book. And, you know, I must admit, when Monica said we're doing 2 Kings, a part of me went, oh, history. Okay. You know, someone once said the one thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. So I hope today I'm not going to give you a history lesson. That's not the goal. But the goal is to kind of read some of what took place back then and understand what do we learn from this? What do we draw from this that can actually benefit us? Just to get us going, the youngest person to ever win an Oscar. Anyone know who it was? Shirley Temple, 6 years old. Youngest person to climb Mount Everest. You won't know his name. How old do you reckon? 13, close. Youngest person to surf Pipeline. Anyone know his name?
Andrew Hamilton.
Oh, I wish. John Florence, 10 years old. No, 8 years old, actually. 8 years old. Wow. Youngest person to solve a Rubik's Cube. Now, there's a bit of contention around this, but this was in a Rubik's Cube competition. How old do you reckon she was? 3. I still haven't figured that sucker out. Youngest person to swim in the English Channel. How old do you reckon?
10.
Yeah, close, 11. 11. The youngest person to preach in church. Now, I don't know if this is preaching or not, but if you're on YouTube, there's a kid called Cannon Tipton. Looks like one of those snake-handling churches in America, you know. He was 4 years old. And look, it's actually pretty deplorable to watch. And the oldest person to be a reigning king is Ovo Kabamba in Uganda, who became king at 3 years old. You got to wonder, what do you do at 3? In Uganda, they have a president. So he's kind of like, he's a bit like the queen, you know. He doesn't really do anything. He's just kind of, he's got the name. But we're looking today at the life and contribution of Josiah, who was the youngest king Judah ever had, 8 years old. His dad, Ammon, dies. He becomes king. That's kind of how it works in monarchy. You don't get elected, you just inherit. And you go, what can a kid of 8 do with this messed up community that is Israel and Judah? Well, it's actually Judah. And if you look back the last 2 kings, his dad and his granddad were shockers, all right? Manasseh, we read about, he's the guy who sacrificed his own kid in the fire. You know, they brought all these altars and Asherah poles and whatever into the temple. So right now, the temple looks more like a New Age fair, all right? If you can imagine, but back in the day, when we planted a church up in Perth, we were moving to the suburb of Butler and we heard about a healing festival that was going on. And we thought, we knew what that was about, all right? It's Reiki, it's crystals, it's whatever. So we applied for a stall there. Christocentric healing, we were called. And we were there in the middle of this room, probably about this size, with all these other forms of healing. Now, that's probably what the temple looked and felt like in that day. It was just people having a bet either way. Not sure if God's going to come through, so we'll have a bet on a few other things along the way. That's where it got to under Manasseh and under Ammon. And you really couldn't get much further from where God would want you to be, all right? But whatever went down in Josiah's early life, he made a choice to say, I'm going to do things differently. And he must have made it pretty early. If you read Chronicles, it says that in the 8th year of his reign, so he's 16 years old, he began to seek the God of his father David. So here's this teenage kid going, all right, I can look around me and I can see a mess. And I can see how ugly life has become and how far we've moved from God. I'm going to get back in the game. And he makes a choice to move that direction as a teenager. So I see a few young people here today. Your choices you make are really important at that age. Do not neglect them. That's really, really important. So he charts a course towards the God of his father, David. What's wrong with that statement? David's not his father. Spot on. And I don't know about you. We celebrated my dad's 90th the other day. And I'm just going to move away from the mic so that whatever gets recorded, this bit doesn't get hurt. But I haven't had a particularly good experience. My son has died. I have some fathering time over here. I can actually give that to other young men. And I know that's needed. So when Josiah speaks of David as his father, I think what he's saying is, here's someone I can look to who I can actually respect and who I can actually follow. So he picks David. And you've got to be honest, he's not exactly a picture of perfection either, is he? But somehow in God's eyes, David's the guy, the guy after God's own heart. So I want to encourage you, if you've had that bad experience in your family, you can be a circuit breaker. You can actually be the person who says, it stops with me, it stops with us, all right? Josiah sets a new tone and a new direction for the people of Israel. And just an observation on leadership from Kings. Is strong leadership a good thing? You're not answering the question because strong leadership is a double-edged sword. All right? It's a double-edged sword. And right now we see some strong leadership in our world and it's horrifying. All right? We see some strong leaders making some really, really bad decisions. And as we've looked at the people, the kings over the passage of history in Israel and Judah, you see strong leaders come in and make some good decisions, make some bad decisions. It seems as they speak of the kings, they're either good or bad. There doesn't seem to be a lot of nuance. And honestly, I reckon there were some medium kings, probably some who weren't too bad, probably some who weren't too good. But Josiah is one that stands out and goes, he's a good king. He really was kind of, I would pick him for my team over David. All right, I reckon this guy's the goods. And the reason I refer to strong leadership is I think sometimes in the church, we want a good, strong leader. Which sounds a little bit like the Israelites saying, we want a king to rule over us, you know. We want a strong leader to take us somewhere until they take us where we don't want to go or until they do something dodgy. And I know you guys are still in the process of figuring out what you do by way of a leader. And strong leadership, I just want to say, is a double-edged sword. If you get a leader, make sure you get a Christ-like leader because that's far more important than anything else. And if you want to read a great book on strong leadership gone wrong, read Jesus and John Wayne. Story of how the American church has embraced the superhero, the kind of the tough man, and how that has moved into both politics and church. I get the sense that by the time he's 16, Josiah has had time to observe the mess his father and his grandfather made. And as a teenager, he's kind of gone, you know how teenagers sometimes go, what the heck? This is nonsense. This is ridiculous. He's railed against it. He said, I'm having nothing to do with this nonsense. All right. So at the tender age of 20, he starts going around Jerusalem, smashing down the Asherah poles, whacking out the altars. He's actually cleaning house at the age of 20. Pretty bold, pretty strong, you know, good strong, but wow. 20-year-olds have a way of shooting straight and being blunt sometimes, don't they? 20-year-olds kind of don't have all the nuance that maybe you get as you get a little bit older. I wonder what a 20-year-old Josiah would say to the Australian church today. I don't know if I'd want to hear it, to be quite honest. I remember going on a basketball mission trip to the Philippines and seeing how people lived over there, seeing the poverty and then reading the scriptures around poverty and coming back and saying to the guy who was the senior pastor of the church we were part of, saying, what is the deal? Why are we so incredibly wealthy? And I went on this rant, you know, Dad, you shouldn't be living in this house. You shouldn't be driving that car. I really had a crack at the old man, you know, for all the stuff that he had. It was okay for me to have my little glant and my little... But, you know, and you get older and you realise, yeah, you got to live somewhere, and yeah, you got a job that pays you money, and you got to drive a car, and you can drive an old car which breaks down. It's cheaper. You can drive a new car which is, you know, doesn't break down. It's a bit more expensive. Life is complicated. But sometimes you still need a young person just to go, you know what, I look at you guys and you look like you're half asleep. I'm not referring to you right now, okay? But you need someone to do that. I've seen young people do that. Doesn't always go down well, all right? I sometimes think if it were not for youthful idealism, we probably wouldn't do many things. I remember when we planted a church, I thought we were going to plant this church that was going to see Australians come to faith, it was going to grow, going to write a book, do the conference tour, you know, get involved in a scandal or something, you know as it goes. But, you know, I thought we were going to do something amazing. And from the front end, I was so excited about this. And then in the middle of it, as it was just wasn't going anything like I'd planned, I thought, wow, this is hard work. You know, I sometimes think if we didn't have the anticipation, think marriage, all right? If you knew what marriage was going to be like, all right, all of marriage, you know, after 40 or 50 years, whatever, at 20 you might go, oh, I might pass on that, you know, wouldn't you? No, maybe you wouldn't. But I think my wife would probably say, yeah, I'd probably think twice about it. We've had this conversation where if one of us dies, we're not marrying someone else. We're not going through all that all over again, all right? As good as it is, and we've done some counselling to get where we're up to, it can be hard. But I want to encourage you young people too that when you see things amiss or see things where you go, I'm reading the scriptures and I'm looking at my church or I'm looking at my family, just call it out and speak about it and ask questions kindly, as kindly as you can. So the big news in chapter 22 is that Josiah does a bit of clearing out, then he decides to repair the temple. All right, temple's obviously in ruins. Temple's got all sorts of stuff all through it that's not appropriate, and they've got some money still coming into the temple. It's obviously a bit of a money spinner. You know, maybe they've hired out some space to Asherah and to Baal and whoever else. You know, they've still got some money coming in. He says, "I'm going to use this money to build this thing up." So he sends these people out to do it. Says, "Don't worry about keeping your receipts. Trust you guys. Go for it. Fix the temple." And along the way, they find the book of the law. All right. Hilkiah finds it and he brings it to Shaphan, who reads it to Josiah. And you've got to ask, didn't anyone notice that this book was missing? And for how long? Yeah, it's like, imagine the Australian Constitution going missing in Parliament. It's like, surely someone knows where this thing is. Or imagine a Bible being found in a church. But, oh, we found a Bible. All right, that's the kind of thing we're talking about. Why hasn't anyone noticed up until now? I get the hunch that maybe the whole moral slide that Judah and Israel were on meant that no one really just wanted to say anything. And here's the other thing, you know, in a predominantly oral culture, when people stop passing on the stories get lost. And if the stories are in the book and the book gets lost, hidden away, then the stories get taken out of the culture. And I think what's happened is Hilkiah's found this book, taken it to Shaphan. Shaphan's read it to Josiah. And he's gone, what the heck? We are so far from this. We're so messed up. And the Bible says he tore his robes, which is a sign of repentance. He goes, we have really stuffed things up. You know, curiously, we live in an increasingly secular culture founded on and shaped by Christian ideals, which is interesting. Whether you have any religious background or not, you'd know do unto others as, you know, you want them to do unto you. People know that stuff. They know you're not supposed to steal. You're not supposed to sleep with other people's partners. You know there's some rules in our society that have come from our Christian heritage. Tom Holland, in his book Dominion, he writes about the significance of a Christian story in shaping the Western world, even if we don't realise it, and even if every day we're moving further away from it. But it did set the tone once. You know, last year there was a debate in some American schools about whether they should post the Ten Commandments on the walls of schools. I'm not suggesting that. I don't think that's such a good idea. But Josiah recovers the book of the law, Shaphan reads it to him, he tears his clothes, and he stands up and he says, no more. This stops with me. He says God's angry with us. Verse 13, he sends one of his prophets, sends his crew to one of the prophets to hear her thoughts. Verse 13 says, go and inquire of the Lord for me and for the people and for all Judah about what is written in this book that's been found. Great is the Lord's anger that burns against us because those who've gone before us have not obeyed the words of this book. They've not acted in accordance with what's written there. So they go and see a woman called Huldah. She's a prophet. And they say, tell us what you think, Huldah. And interesting, I think sometimes when we see dark times, we think the whole thing's gone, the whole thing's gone kaput. There are always people out there who hold the faith. There's always people somewhere who are still carrying on, still staying true. So they go and see her, and she speaks words of judgment. She speaks about how the Assyrians are going to come and they're going to take Judah away, and it's going to end really, really badly. But she says, because Josiah, you repented, you tore your robes, ain't going to happen in your lifetime, for better or worse. That's how it's going to, still going to happen, just not going to happen in your lifetime. So at this point, the 10 northern tribes have already been taken into exile. It's just Judah who's left. So Josiah has chosen the path of moving towards Yahweh and seeking to align his life with his. And what we see here is someone who hasn't just said, this is really bad, we should do something. He's actually doing stuff. His life and his speech line up, all right? He doesn't claim to put things right while living a secretly idol-centered life. He leads by example. In many ways, it's that simple for us. Maybe sometimes we need to make hard choices and say, you know what, this sits in my life as an idol and it's got to go. And sometimes we make those hard choices. Josiah is an initiative taker. He doesn't sit back and wait for someone else to step up. You know, I listen to John Anderson's podcast sometimes. I listen to a whole range. So John's pretty far on the right. But he speaks about the fact that we don't have enough what he calls conviction politicians anymore. We have people who lead according to the popular vote. Now, I think he'd like Josiah because he's a conviction king. He's a guy who says, this may not be popular with you people, but this is where we're headed. So in chapter 23, verses 4 to 20 are where he gives orders for all the altars, all the shrines, all the nonsense to be taken down. And if I went through it, it's this meticulous description of him grinding things to powder, burning things on altars. And it finishes with him killing all of the false priests. It's pretty brutal. I don't know how you reconcile that one, but anyway, he's cleaning house. And his actions are uncompromising. What do we perceive as idols today? I don't know what you see, but you know, I was up at the Christian Surfers gathering a couple of weeks back up in Horrocks, speaking to that crew and hanging out with them. And I know as a surfer that surfing can become an idol. You can be a surfer who's a Christian, or you can be a Christian who's a surfer. But a surfing can become an idol. There's a bunch of things. Shopping can become an idol because we're having a bad time. We'll go shopping and it feels better. The world is made right again. I feel whole. You know, here I am in Margaret River wine country and I'm a non-drinker now. I know. I wish I wasn't, but I am. I am now a non-drinker. And last Sunday, it popped up on my diary, said 13 years alcohol-free. Because for me, it started to become a thing. I didn't drink when I was a kid, didn't drink until I got married. My wife introduced me to alcohol. I blame her. But over a period of time, I noticed that I was having a drink at 5 o'clock, then one with dinner, then one after dinner. And then you'd look at that bottle and you'd go, there's only that much left. Because they were big drinks. And you go, that's a waste. I should finish that. And that was probably 7 nights a week. And we spoke about it many times, Danelle and I. And I tried moderation. I'm not real good at moderation. I'm better at indulgence. Yeah, I realised I was drinking cask wine sometimes because no one knows how much you've drunk. Maybe you smile because you've been there, done that. Maybe not. But maybe you have. You know, I realised one night, Danelle went out and I drank a bottle of red and I hid the bottle. And you go, there's something wrong here, eh? But I couldn't stop it. Let me change the story a little bit because I'm going to come back to that in a moment. I want to tell you how it stopped. When I was a pastor up at Les Murdy, and again, I'm going to move away from the mic. When I was a pastor, that's not a hero story, that's a reality of sometimes we have things in our lives that bring us joy, bring us pleasure, that lure us away from God, and they sit alongside him. So the Israelites in this time, they hadn't ditched Yahweh completely, they just got other stuff that sat alongside him. So they're hedging their bets, you know, they go to Yahweh when they felt like it, but you know, if it was easier to find a quicker solution, they'd go there. So, idols, what are they? Shopping, escapism, investing, shoring up our own security, family, you know. I remember I was talking to the Christian surfers, and when I was in Les Murdy, leading the youth ministry up there, a young guy became a Christian, and he was a surfer. We were the only two surfers in the church, and occasionally we'd go surfing together. And when he asked to get baptized, I'd been baptizing a couple of people that night and had done the same question for all of them. Do you believe Jesus Christ is Lord and that God raised him from the dead? Yes. Do you choose to follow him as your Lord and give your life to him? Yes. So I said, Andrew, I'm going to change the question for you, mate. He said, do you believe Jesus Christ is Lord? That one, yes. Do you want to follow him more than you want to go surfing? And he said, no. That's awkward, isn't it? His whole family come to see him get baptized. I said, no. And he quickly said, sorry, yes. But for a moment there, I'm thinking, I don't think I can baptize you. And yet post-baptism, we still have these things that lure us away from God. From the takedown of idolatry, Josiah doesn't just kind of clean house. Yeah, Jesus says if you're going to take spirits out, you've got to bring something good in to make sure the place doesn't get worse. He actually starts to restore the faith practices that had shaped the people in better times. Verse 21 says, he gave the order, celebrate the Passover to the Lord your God, as it is written in this book of the covenant. Neither in the days of the judges who led Israel, nor in the days of the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah had any such Passover been observed. I'm not sure whether they're saying there'd been no Passover in that time or nothing like this one. He had 33,000 lambs killed and sacrificed. Where do you find 33,000 lambs? I don't know. That's a heck of a load, isn't it? Furthermore, verse 24, he got rid of the mediums, the spiritists, the household gods, the idols and all the other detestable things seen in Jerusalem and Judah. This he did to fulfill the requirements of the law. He does the job properly. Demolishes everything that says pagan and then he leads the people back to their true identity as people loved by God, with the Passover being symbolic of that. The Passover being their primary source of identity when God freed them and led them to be his own people. Now, for us, the equivalent would be the communion meal. When we remember what Jesus has done for us. But I want to encourage you that, you know, it's not just a case of going, I'm going to ditch this, I'm going to ditch that. Something needs to fill that space. You know, over the years, Christians have various spiritual practices, spiritual disciplines that they engage with. It's a bit like when I go cycling to help me become the person I wouldn't normally be. Now, if I don't cycle, if I don't surf, I put on weight and I get fat. You know, I need these practices to actually help me be healthy. Same way, you know, what Paul says to Timothy, you know, physical training has some value, but spiritual training is valuable both for now and eternity. What are the practices you do that keep you focused? So it's a move away from one thing, back to God, but with practices that keep us centered on him. There's a guy at the moment doing some teaching around this stuff that's it's really good and easy to listen to. A guy called John Mark Comer. I don't know if you've come across him, but he's got some good things to say. He's kind of mid-30s, maybe early 40s, kind of easy listening, but very, very valuable information. So Josiah gets the ship sailing down the right direction, and then he goes to war against Pharaoh of Egypt, Pharaoh Necho, and he kills him. End of Josiah. End of the story. But here's a picture of godly leadership at its best. He's a bloke who's prepared to stand for stuff. Sometimes, yeah, let me just go back and just review what I've tried to share from this story. Sometimes we have to draw a line under our inherited family practices that are unhealthy. We can be a circuit breaker for sin in our family line. Strong leadership is a double-edged sword. Good when it's Josiah, not so good when it's Manasseh. Youth often tell us things that we may miss, and we need to listen to our young people. And I'd encourage our young people to step up too. People rarely abandon God completely. More common is this shared allegiance, a recognition of him but a few backup plans just in case he isn't as good as he says he is. There may be something in your life that you hold on to as your comfort. Maybe it even controls you. That was what was happening with alcohol and me. Perhaps it feels like a pair of handcuffs, but kind of warm handcuffs. Only you can make the choice to step away with that and then replace it with practices that form you into the person of Christ. Let me pray for you. Father, I pray we will learn from history. I pray as we listen to these stories from the Old Testament, from the historical books, that the lives of these leaders, both good and bad, will help us understand how we can live more consciously and more effectively in this culture that we are a part of. We just recognize that our story is no longer the dominant story, that we are on the margins, and we could easily blend in, fade out. I want to pray you'd help us to stand out in the best way. Help us to be people of integrity. Help us to be people who represent you well in the world as we go out this week. And we pray that in your name. Amen.